The Sportszilla Show from 2 to 4.
Please refer to my opening statement.
It's the Sportszilla Show.
Major bag alert. Major bag alert. Major bag alert. Major.
This is the Sportszilla Show.
Too slow, too slow. Pick it up.
With Rain.
Use the backboard, please.
And Matt.
There was six or seven balls he couldn't get in his hands, and he can gradually grab those. But
the glue guy.
One thing he does is he gets his hands in there, and he grabbed the ball better. He was bobbling a lot. He grabbed it better tonight.
Trying to do too much.
I need a reporter to figure that out who's never played basketball and is 5'2".
I can't guarantee that anybody in the world will be alive Sunday, so I can't guarantee who will be on our roster on Sunday. So that goes for all of us.
The Sportszilla Show starts now with Rain and Matt on twitch.tv/QSportsTalk and ESPN Radio.
We've learned that the glue guy Matt Page is a ball bobbler, according to Jim Boeheim. I made that, my bad. Rain, we did omit Spencer Davidson, the glue guy. That will be corrected soon enough. Welcome back into whatever this is that we do for 2 hours, sir.
You called him the glue guy.
Spencer, I called you the glue guy?
You called me the glue guy.
Oh, okay. Matt Page is the glue guy.
You can call me the heart of the team. I like that one.
I'm Rain. You're the heart of the team. Seattle Kraken shirt
Seattle
today.
Seattle Kraken officially having a roster tomorrow.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Tampa Bay Lightning, whose AHL affiliate is in Central New York, the Syracuse Crunch, made a trade with the Rangers for Colin Blackwell, and he's in a mock draft I'm looking for the Seattle Kraken, as you are wearing a Seattle Kraken shirt with a Rangers hat. You are a Rangers fan.
I am a Rangers fan. I don't want anybody to muddy the waters on that. It's just that I appreciate a new team in the league. I appreciate the team's logo and name, so I want to, you know, give them some love.
We're going to talk about the expansion draft that is tomorrow, at least briefly in just a couple of minutes. SU football tickets available to the general public as of Thursday. I've learned that. I've also learned today that Michael Benajay, former Syracuse player, obviously, was left off the final roster for Nigeria for the Olympics
that sucks.
Fast approaching. And yes, you said it correctly. Is it S-U-C-K-S sucks or S-U-X-X sucks? It sucks either way.
Just one X.
It just sucks. How about three X's? Would that work for you guys? We'll move on.
Okay.
We got a humble brag to get us started with Spencer Davidson because we're going to talk to Nick Delahanty with Bronx Pinstripes about the New York Yankees taking 2 of 3 and getting back after it tonight against the Philadelphia Phillies. Anytime we do talk about the Yankees, by the way, here on ESPN Radio and the Sportszilla Show, it's brought to you by Frone & Son, it's brought to you by William Attar.
There you go.
Hurting a car, call William Attar. 444-4444. He does not give me a half a second to correct myself. He just pounces whenever I make a mistake.
He's ready for it.
Yankees on deck with Matt and myself at 6 o'clock tonight. That's brought to you by Frone & Son Funeral Home, Pathfinder Bank, and the Killebrew Saloon. He wanted to jump in right there.
I was gonna give you the help with the sponsor if you didn't have it correct.
Man, you just cannot wait to throw him under the bus at every turn.
No, I'm just trying to help the man out.
He did. You totally did. I appreciate you, my man.
Throw a lifesaver to him.
All right. Let's get this humble brag out of the way, Spencer. This is a leftover from Friday when you were in with us. Go ahead.
I think what we got to do is start capturing some of the audio and bringing it back to prove how fantastic I am at predictions. Because I did say, and this isn't a major prediction, but I felt like the Yankees were going to come in strong and take 2 out of 3 against the Boston Red Sox. And it didn't look good after the first game of the series, but here we are, and they got the job done. They took 2 of 3 out of the Reds against the Red Sox, and that's exactly what they needed.
Matt, he stated that he's fantastic at predictions.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to leave that for the Twitch chat at Q Sports Talk on twitch.tv. Anytime you make a prediction from here on out,
and it has to be right.
You end up being wrong, they're going to remember. They're going to remember. I'm telling you right now, and they're going to remind you, and that's okay. You got to bring it to me. You got to bring it to the glue guy.
Can we, have a segment called Nostra Davidson?
Yes. Yeah, let's do that. I'll give voice work for that.
Reminds me of what did Colin get right and what did Colin get wrong.
I'd have way more wrong than right.
Yeah, I think I do, too. It's like I've stated many times, never, ever make a bet on anything that I predict. We do have Michael Lear joining us today at about 3:30. The professor / TBT reporter. I can't wait till Saturday to get that started. He'll join us about 3:30. We're expecting Jason Fitz from Spain and Fitz at 3:15. And did I leave any? Oh, Jordan Renan. ESPN Radio in Central New York is the home of the New York Football Giants. And in some senses, training camps are getting underway today. We'll cover that in just a second. But it's football season. It is. Training camp doesn't mean much. I know we got a couple more weeks, still some exhibition games, even though it's only three this year instead of four.
Good.
As they've added an extra game to the regular season. It's an exciting day if you're a football fan, and it feels like everybody is.
It is, yeah. And you're always reading the beat reporters, what they're saying about your team during training camp, even though, just like you just said, it doesn't really matter.
Oh, we do have some tickets for TBT, by the way. I forgot to throw that in. I mentioned it yesterday. We've got to get the information out there at some point over the next couple of hours and give some of these away. I think Orange Nation was doing that, and we'll get you taken care of, I'm sure. You have to get yourself to Illinois.
That's correct.
But we can provide some tickets. There was a fun exchange between Tampa Brady. I'm waiting. No reaction?
Nothing.
Nothing from the glue guy?
Nothing.
Still his quarterback. Don't care what he says.
Poker face.
He's at the Orange House with Tampa Bay with Biden. You know how you celebrate championships there. They gave him a jersey with a 46 on it. They had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's good to see that. Congratulations to Tampa Bay.
That's just a weird number, though, 46.
It is.
It looks very odd on a
President
jersey.
Biden referenced that. He said, what a weird number.
You ready to go, guys?
Let's do it.
I am. It's ESPN Radio and the Sports Illa Show. Officially, this is called Does It Matter? Matt will ask Spencer and myself some questions.
Does it matter? It's the Sportszilla Show with Rain and Matt on ESPN Radio and twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Does it matter?
Spencer, does it matter that the NBA Finals could end tonight?
Yeah, of course it matters. It's, you know, this has been one of the, for at least myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people out there, this has been the best NBA playoffs in years. The most exciting, the most unpredictable NBA playoffs in years. You almost don't want to see it end, but you know the Bucks are at home. They have all the momentum on their side, so I could very realistically see them taking this in six. But again, I think like we've talked about all along, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Suns win and go seven. But I think I'm leaning towards the Bucks tonight, folks.
I don't care about being surprised. I want Game 7.
I want Game 7, too.
Everyone does.
It's so, the greatest thing in sports.
That's why it matters, because you know we don't want it to end.
So LeBron James is courtside in Game 5, right? And Giannis said first time he was in the finals in 2007, I wasn't playing basketball. That's crazy to think
Wild.
About. Isn't
Wild.
That insane?
Wild.
That is insane.
And now look at his resume, and he's 26 years old. He's going to add, if they win this, he's finals MVP also.
Absolutely.
And of course, a champion.
He's the only reason why they are in the position they're in. I shouldn't say only reason, but they even in the first two games of the series, I mean, he was the only guy showing up for Milwaukee.
And I love his mindset. We talked about it yesterday, talking about your pride and your ego and living in the moment and just a leadership mentality that this team follows him. He was also talking about Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, and he said, I'm tired. I look next to me. Chris is tired. Drew is tired. They're like my brothers, you know, and that's why you want to hug them. You put your arm around them, and you say, we got this. We got this together until the end. We're close until the end. That team is together.
Also, he took the tinkle heard around the world because
twice,
because ever since that tinkle, the Bucks have won.
Yeah.
Every game.
Ever since Guy Fieri showed up courtside in Phoenix.
Flavortown, baby.
They're 0-3. Phoenix is 0-3. There's a jinx. I brought this up yesterday. I'm telling you, Flavortown is jinxing the Phoenix Suns.
So do you think that the Phoenix Suns are taking a Diners, Drive-In, and Dive?
Ha! Triple D.
Triple D.
It all ties in. Any dad joke that you want to make, I'm going to blame it on Guy Fieri if the Suns don't win.
Yeah.
I thought they had a chance, but you know what? I think there's a little bit...
fatigue factor with CP3.
And there's a little bit more of a veteran presence on the Bucks. I think Phoenix being generally a little bit younger, I think that's advantage Milwaukee in this. I guess we're going to see if it ends tonight. Does it matter on ESPN Radio with the Sports Illa? Should we get another question from the glue guy?
Does it matter that NFL training camps, at least these few for rookies, begin? Tampa Bay, the Jets, the Giants, the Jaguars, Baltimore, and Buffalo. Rookies report today.
Yep, and there's three, I believe it's three teams officially reporting this week, aside from the rookies, the Bucks, the Cowboys, and the Steelers. Yeah, hallelujah. I'm just so ready for some football. I want to see, for me personally, what my Giants are made of. The questions about Saquon Barkley's knee, I'm concerned. He's still got some time to get ready. He's not sure, and they're not sure if it'll be week one, even if it's an extra week or two. There's a lot of weapons now. My biggest concern, and isn't it always the offensive line, because doesn't football start and end there on every team, on every level, Spencer?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a very important year for the Giants, you know, getting Saquon back from injury, seeing how he does, like you referenced, Rain. But also, this is the time where, you know, Daniel Jones really has to step up and prove himself. You know, year three, this is really an important time for him to kind of show what he's made of and see his growth. So he needs to take a major step this year for I think, for myself to feel comfortable about this team's future, even not being a fan of them, just being a fan of the sport. I think so. You know, we'll see what Daniel Jones really is. We'll see the real Daniel Jones. You know, from my standpoint, on the flip side, my team being the Jets, I'm excited for this new era, seeing, you know, what Zach Wilson is made of. You know, they've made some key signings. They've drafted some people for their line. Their line has been atrocious the past few years. Did not help Sam Darnold at all. I'm excited for the Robert Saleh era. I'm excited to see what Zach Wilson has to bring. Phil Lovanco, hit me up. I'm on Team Wilson. We can both finally agree now, so let's move forward.
Expectations for the Jets this season.
Wait a minute. You just kerfuffled in does it matter? Right there. Personal airing of the grievances.
Did he had his mic bomb.
Did I kerfuffle or did I bury a kerfuffle? I effectively ended a kerfuffle, did I not?
One-sided.
We will invite your arch nemesis in at some point soon and get to the bottom of this. I'm sorry for interrupting. Glue guy next.
So does it matter that the Seattle expansion draft is tomorrow?
Absolutely. And the fact that it's really the first time hockey is being featured on ESPN, you know, with this new television deal. And it's so exciting, the exposure for the sport. You know, who knows? Maybe people who haven't been following the sport see this expansion draft with the Seattle Kraken and become Seattle Kraken fans, or at least get interested in the sport. And guys, we have a lot of connections to our area with these potential Seattle Kraken's expansion draft. I mean, you know, you've got a few players who are former Comets or Syracuse Crunch players that in the mock draft could be Seattle Kraken players.
I'll drop the names
for
you.
Drop the names.
If you're a Utica Comets fan, Chicago's Adam Gaudette was a Canuck. Obviously, he got moved there. The other one was Cole Lind, who finally got his cup of coffee in the NHL. And wasn't it Yanni Gord was the former Crunch player?
He was with the Crunch,
Troy Stetcher's another name, was a former Canuck, at least within that organization. There's some good hockey players. They're going to be good like Vegas. I don't know if they're going to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, but they're going to be a good team. There's a lot of talent available. Carey Price was one, if you're looking for a goaltender, by the way, that has been made available for this expansion draft. So
very interesting. I mean, and Carey Price would be the equivalent of Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, with the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, that established, you know, goaltender, you know, elite style goaltender that if they take him, could be the cornerstone of them starting off really strong.
And you got any more for us before we go to the first break?
I'll have you ask that final question.
You're talking about, are we staying in hockey now?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Does it matter that Luke Prokop is... Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, I believe so.
Thank you.
That's why I didn't want to ask the question. I didn't know how to pronounce it.
He was his own segment. He was afraid of the question.
Does that matter?
I was afraid.
Yes, it does.
I was afraid, too. That's why I was hoping he would ask it. There's mispronunciations on occasion. That's why we have a sports director, Spencer Davidson, in here with us. Does it matter that he is hockey's Carl Nassib? Very nice to see, because everybody can play. That's the motto. When it comes to the NHL, great. I love the statement from Gary Bettman. We're not going to read you the entire thing, but just now the second major sport where we can just move on from this issue that shouldn't be an issue. I applaud it. That's all I have to say.
It absolutely matters. And I think one of the reason why it matters is because when you have guys like Carl Nassib, when you have guys like Luke Prokop coming out and revealing their truth, and you see the outpouring of support that they have, you know, some people ask, well, why is this news? Well, it's news because of the fact that we still live in a time where some people feel like they can't reveal their truth. So when you have high profile guys like these and you bring that type of awareness, that brings us a step closer to it not having to be an issue.
And it makes it easier for other people to come out.
Exactly. And so you won't see it be as big of a deal if this happens, because these guys are kind of paving the way. It's fantastic to see. And I mean, it doesn't matter who you love, what you want, whatever. If you can play the sport and you're a good teammate and a good human being, That's all that matters.
It brings Carl Nassib's name back into the conversation, too. And with the speed of news cycles, you might have forgotten about, hey, Dwayne Haskins, we were talking about that situation with his wife and domestic abuse. On the flip side of the way we normally talk about it, especially right. in the world of sports, and then the Richard Sherman situation, where he wants that to go away because he's addressing some issues. But guess what? It didn't. The last question, it doesn't matter here on ESPN Radio.
Does it matter that the Richard Sherman 911 operator is under investigation?
Let me give you just a quick snippet of what we're talking about. We aired the entire thing a few days ago when the story broke.
I cut the gate. We live behind it. It's Richard Sherman. Like, ma'am, this is like a emergency. I need officers
hey,
here
listen
now.
Listen to me. I'm handling this. You need to stop telling me that.
Okay, but what I'm
not going to slow help down.
He's
not going to slow help down.
There are those that are saying, well, she did nothing wrong. She was trying to get the information. But in a situation like that, when somebody is in a crisis situation, they're not concerned with their manners
right.
necessarily. She was dismissive, and that's what the issue is. And so now she is under investigation. She's going to end up losing her job. They're claiming it's going to be a month or three. I don't think, and even when I initially heard that, I was sitting there going, what is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about that on air. I think it was Friday when we played the audio.
A little bit of compassion and empathy for this lady. She's scared. She is scared. If that's your wife or your daughter in that situation, you would be too. Not to mention this happened at his wife Ashley's parents' house. So they're terrified as well. Think about her dad sitting or step sitting in there going, do I want my wife with this guy? Is this a one-time incident? What's going on here? They're frightened. They're terrified. Yeah. Handle it a little bit better. I think you have to at least look into it. Maybe she doesn't lose her job. Maybe there's things. Obviously, there's a protocol to being a 911 operator I know nothing about. But on the surface, you would think you've at least got to ask some questions and investigate a little bit further.
Yeah. I when I listened to it, I was very disappointed in the operator. And not only what she said, but the tone, her tone,
that was
her attitude. It, you know, I
was kind of dismissive.
Exactly. You know, look, it's a very high pressure, high stress situation for everybody. But the way to go about it, you know, she would interrupt her and just say flat out, stop, stop, stop. You know, Rain, you just talked about it. I mean, this is a major thing in these people's lives. She's scared for her life, her parents' life, her husband's life, because remember, she was saying that Richard was threatening to kill himself.
And he was highly intoxicated.
You just don't know.
And he got behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah.
That brings anybody in the outside world into the situation. Scary situation.
And there are ways to try to calm somebody down in a situation like that without being so stern. It's a very delicate situation, and I just think that she was a little bit cold and didn't help anything. I think she only made it worse.
She did. I believe that is true. We're going to stop right there, take our first break on the Sports Illa Show on ESPN Radio. Our kerfuffle is next. Who's got some sports beef? And then we'll get to Nick Delahanty with Bronx Pinstripes to talk Yankees in and around 2:30. Hang on.
Who's got Twitter beef?
Hey, here's an idea. Why don't you mind your own business?
Bulletin board material.
Oh, you can't say that, but it got said.
We've got another Donnybrook.
That is not appropriate behavior, okay?
An athletic brouhaha.
You're a meanie.
Let's go toe-to-toe. It's the Sportzilla Kerfuffle.
A classic conundrum.
On twitch.tv/QSportsTalk and ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio, Syracuse and Oswego, 97.7, 100.1. You know dinosaur barbecue, salt potatoes, right? You're in the Utica, Rome area. I mean, what's the food? Is it the Riggies? What is it?
Greens, man.
Sure.
I do love Riggies, though.
Okay, you go out to Western New York. Let's see your Ra-Cha-Cha area garbage plate, right?
Yeah, but you know what? Utica, I have to admit, Half Moons, man.
Okay, Half Moons. But there's local delicacies.
Yeah.
In Cincinnati, it's the Skyline Chili. And our kerfuffle today starts with the Mets play-by-play guy, Gary Cohn, just demolishing them and making us laugh. I wonder what everybody thinks about this. Let's react after we hear this. So this is literally during the game within the stadium. They're playing the Reds.
This is the local delicacy known as Skyline Chili, the five-way with the spaghetti and the beans and the cheese.
Five-way.
First, the disgusting chili gravy. what do you put on the onions? You put some mustard or something?
No. Wait a second. After the onions comes the cheese, and that's what makes it the five-way. Here it goes, the cheese. They put like 10 tons of shredded cheese on there, and this is supposed to be food that you actually eat.
Now, does the cheese melt, or is that a...
Ronnie, have you ever had Skyline Chili?
I have not.
I would recommend...
Not having it, or...
Well, no, you need to try everything once.
Okay,
right?
All right.
If it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. Try it once, and then you'll never eat it again.
Peanuts and Cracker Jacks, it's not just that at the ballpark anymore. It's true. I mean, some of the food at Yankee Stadium, for example, way overpriced, but delicious. Even minor league ballparks, they're getting better. It's not just a hot dog, popcorn, you know, some chicken tenders, peanuts and Cracker Jacks. Nope, now it's the Skyline Chili. He's not a fan, clearly. So I wonder, did he actually try them, Spencer? That's my next question.
I believe so. I just think he knew enough about it, and I don't think he would have been as heated if he hadn't actually known what it was like. I do have to respect the fact that he did still advise to try it once. It wasn't something where he was like avoided at all costs, because yeah, he's right. You should try everything once just to see whether or not you like it. So I respect that. But I think my favorite line throughout the entire thing was, this is supposed to be food that you eat.
Yeah, and apparently it is not, at least in Gary Cohen's household. Hey, Luis Rojas, based on him getting mad about the Taiwan Walker situation, where was it fair, was it foul when he flipped it out and then he stood there and they scored three runs. They came back to win that game, though, against Pittsburgh, suspended two games. So I suppose there's maybe a disagreement there. Do you appeal the suspension to cut it down to one? I guess we'll find out if you're a Mets fan. Moving on in the kerfuffle on Sports Illustrated show on ESPN Radio. Byron Cowart versus Tom Brady, week four. You've heard what he said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Referencing the glue guy on this. How do you feel about that?
There's going to be, no damn ceremony for Tom Brady coming back week four?
Psh.
Is that the comment?
Psh. He's done a lot of this organization. I'm reading the quote from Byron Cowart. He's done a lot of this organization. He's coming back, but he's coming back as an opponent. There ain't going to be no damn ceremony for him or nothing like that. What do you think Tom Brady's reaction was to that?
Laughter.
Whatever.
It's probably, who are you?
Yeah, I was literally just going to say that. Who are you? Who are you to say that? Tom Brady? There's not going to be a ceremony? There's not going to be a celebration of Tom Brady? You don't have enough respect for Tom Brady? I get it. Between the whistles, he's an opponent. You look at it as any other opponent. But to sit there and say there's going to be no damn ceremony, it's Tom freaking Brady. I hate the Patriots. I hated Tom Brady on the field with the Patriots. But come on.
Pre-game ceremony for Byron Cowart before the fourth game of the season and Tom Brady returned.
If he's
to
even
Fox
there
Pro.
By then, Rain.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing.
Not like it's a Gilmore or a Hightower, one of the captains on the team saying this. It's one of the third string defensive linemen.
But you would not hear them say that.
That's fair.
Because they know how much Tom Brady meant to that organization. And they love Tom
and
as a brother.
Billboard material.
Exactly.
Let me give you one more addition to the football version of a kerfuffle here. Sports beef. Michael Irvin against his former team talking about them missing the 85% vaccine threshold. If you're not one of them teams, 85% vaccinated teams, are you really thinking about winning a championship? This ain't the NBA. In this league, that could be it for you. The right person misses 2 weeks. That's it. Your bleep is out. He's right.
Absolutely
right. He's right. He's absolutely right. Cole Beasley, love you, dude, but you're just dead wrong in this situation. You've got to think of other people. Listen, even being vaccinated, we've seen what it's done to the New York Yankees. We don't want these types of things. You can survive Aaron Judge missing a week and a half. You can't sustain missing two games with your best player in a league with parity like this. You just can't. I just don't understand it. You want your team to win, get the shots.
Yeah.
I understand it's your right to choose, and I get all of that. It shouldn't be political. It should just be common sense. It's for the betterment of the league. Ay, ay, ay. Can you imagine? Could you imagine?
No.
Josh Allen. Think about it, Bills fans. Saquon Barkley comes back and he's healthy midway through the season. You miss him for a couple of games. Completely screws up the Giants offense when you're trying to get back to respectability with Daniel Jones, who's out there trying to prove himself, and he needs every weapon and every bit of help that he can get. I could go on and apply it to your Jets or any other team in the league. Mm-hmm. Dak Prescott, if he's healthy, and the Cowboys, same situation. You know, look what happened to him without him last year. And they weren't great last year before he got hurt.
Right.
I could go on, but I'll let you.
Yeah. It is absolutely your right as a human being to decide what you want to do for your own health. But like Rain said, you know, you're also thinking about others here. And yeah, you're thinking about your career because the NFL season is only 17 games right now. And, you know, missing 2 or 3 weeks is huge. Now, that being said, yes, it's your right to decide whether or not you get the vaccine. But it's also the right of private companies to decide how they're going to handle the, you know, people that are vaccinated versus people that are unvaccinated. I think people forget that a private business, like you can walk into a store and if you're unvaccinated, they can still ask you to wear a mask and it's not infringing on your right. They have the right to decide what happens in their place of business. In this case, the NFL, different sports leagues can decide how they want to handle it.
It's the same thing in your house.
Correct.
It's the same thing in your house. You're cool with no mask in your house? That's fine. You go to somebody else's house, it's their house, and they say you're not vaccinated. You can come in, but you got to wear a mask in my house.
Exactly.
It's the same exact type of thing. Needless to say, we'll move on. Nick Delahanty with Bronx Pinstripes is next. We'll talk some New York Yankees, some Major League Baseball. I will say this about Rob Manfred. There's a fan poll out there about some of these rule changes. That's something we have to discuss today, and we'll touch on that and some other things next on ESPN Radio and the Sportszilla Show.
It's the Sportszilla Show with Rain and the Glue Guy, Matt, on ESPN Radio.
You a sports fan?
At twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Sports
Talk. Appreciate the conversations we have during the commercial breaks, and you can join us and get in on those. Q Sports Talk on twitch.tv. Back up on it on the Sportszilla Show with the Accelerate Sports Complex phone line now open again for Nick Delahanty. We welcome him back in with Bronx Pinstripes, of course, to talk about the New York Yankees. Spencer, I'm kicking it to you because you humble bragged about your prediction of 2-3 against the Red Sox. What's the number one takeaway from that series that we can get some good feedback from Nick from? What do you think?
Yeah, I think, Nick, how big was taking 2-3? I mean, you could say, you know, it's only one series. They're still really, you know, far. They're down, by, you know, to the Red Sox heavily in this season series versus them. But just from a confidence standpoint, you know, for the Yankees, knowing that, okay, you know, we can beat these guys. We can actually dominate these guys, you know, as we saw on Sunday. Just, you know, how big can that be for the Yankees moving forward now that they've finally been able to take care of their AL East leading rivals?
I honestly think it's huge. And before the series, you can make the case that when you lost Aaron Judge and Gio Urshela and guys like that to the COVID list, you could have easily made the case that the Red Sox could have came into New York and swept the Yankees and really put a dagger into their plans of trying to get back into the race. But I think the biggest momentum swing, and I know that I'm sure Boston's not happy about it, but the rain shortened game in game two, I think that was a huge momentum shift for the Yankees because prior to that, the Yankees didn't beat the Red Sox at all this year. They were 0-7 coming into that game, the first time since 09 that had happened. So I think that from a confidence standpoint, getting that win and realizing, you know, even with some guys that aren't typically our regulars, we can beat this team. We're still the team that everybody thought we were going to be at the beginning of the year. And with the trade deadline looming, I think that they're going to have to put more performances out like this. But if you look at the past history over the last three series, they've been able to take 2-3 in each of those series. So I think it's a huge momentum boost, and especially knowing that the Red Sox are coming up again this upcoming weekend in a 4-game set in Fenway, I think it goes a long way in helping this team realize, hey, you know, we're not out of it. We're still a team that can compete on a daily basis.
This is Nick Delahanty with Bronx Pinstripes here with us on ESPN Radio. And we've had this recurring thing that we do, Nick, where it's me, Rain versus Rugi, and then they kind of poke the bear. They push my buttons. I've just been anti-Rugi Odor. And then I look up, and the next thing I know, his teammates love him. He's an energy guy. He's a great teammate. And he's the first second baseman in Major League Baseball history with 7-10 home run seasons before he turns 28 years old. The most home runs by a second baseman through their age 27 season, Rugi Odor is 156 of them. Robinson Cano had 116. And listen, Robinson Cano, before going to Seattle and all of the issues, or and then to the Mets and all the issues he's had, is a far better baseball player than Rougui Odor. So now, am I wrong? Do I have to start liking this guy, Nick?
I have to say yes. And here's my opinion on the whole thing. Yes, there are times where Odor fits the typical Yankee build of boom or bust type of a guy. But one thing that this team has lacked, and when he was acquired, really has brought to the table, is that energy and that enthusiasm that you see. And without him in the dugout, I think that this team would be a lot worse than they are. And I feel like that's the purpose of keeping him around, is because of that chemistry. You know, they need that. They need that little spark. And if you look at Odor's numbers, they won't impress you. Yeah, he's got the 10 home runs. But if you look deeper into it, the majority of his hits and clutch home runs have been in the clutch moment that have either tied the game or given the Yankees the lead. So, you know, he may not be that 300 type of hitter you'd want, a second base position or even a guy that gets on base a lot, but you got to give him credit. The guy comes up when he needs to, and it seems like he's an integral part of that clubhouse.
So, obviously, with Gleyber Torres having a pretty good weekend, do you think this could be a turnaround for him moving forward? It just seems like he's seeing the ball a lot better than he did the first couple months of the season.
One thing that I noticed from Gleyber this past couple of days, and you saw when he hit the home runs, Gleyber hasn't shown much emotion on the field. And he's a guy that he would, when he was first coming up, there was always a smile on his face. He's having fun playing the game. It felt like that was kind of taken away. But if you notice, when he hit the home run, I believe it was the first one he hit, it was kind of like a whole relief and pressure off of him. Like, okay, I'm still the guy that came up and could really dominate the game as I shown, but it just hasn't clicked this season. And I think he's seeing the ball better. He's been hitting the ball a lot harder. And now it's starting to translate. In the long run, it's been really beneficial to this Yankees lineup because that's something that they were missing.
Talking to Nick Delahanty here, a beat writer for the Bronx Pinstripes on ESPN Sports Zilla Show. Garrett Cole, two straight games, complete games, one of them coming against the Red Sox, the other against the Astros, just absolutely huge performances. How big was that moment where he basically yelled Boone off the mound? And since then, I mean, he has been lights out. It doesn't seem like he's having any issues now with the lack of sticky stuff. I mean, how big is that for him? How big is that, you know, are his performances for the team? And how much do you think, you know, the Cole yelling Boone off the mound could really be a turning point for this team?
Cole yelling at Boone reminded me of when Mike Messina did it to Joe Torre years back.
Yeah.
It just channeled that feeling. And for the first time in a very long time, and I know CeCe Sabathia was a Warrior and things like that, but for the first time in a long time, it felt like old school baseball with Cole on the mound, just saying, you know, this is my game, this is my team, I want to help this team get this win, I have it in me. So for me, that was a huge turning point, and you got to give Cole a lot of credit. He took a lot of abuse for the sticky stuff, and, you know, I kind of channeled this as like a revenge tour for him. I feel like he's on a mission to kind of get back on track and show everybody, look, that's not going to indicate what kind of pitcher I am. Yeah, I went through a little bit of a tough time trying to adjust from it, but that's not the guy. The sticky stuff did not make me the pitcher that I became to ultimately get that big contract. So I think it's huge. And if the Yankees want any bit to do with the postseason, they need him rolling. And that's what he's been doing of late. He's been flat right dominant. And, you know, the Yankees can't ask for more. They just have to hope he could keep it up over the stretch of games coming up.
Nick, what are we going to do with the trade deadline? I mean, yeah, we've enjoyed the injection of youth and energy with the guys on the COVID list. Clearly, I'm not going to be pinch hitting for anybody. But you got your Gittins, your Parks, your Allens, these guys that are stepping in there. But listen, that's not the long-term solution. What do the Yankees do at the trade deadline? Major moves, small moves. What's the plan going forward in your mind?
For the first time in a very long time, I think that now that we're close to 10 days out from the trade deadline, I can honestly say that I don't even think the Yankees know which way they're going to go.
I agree.
I think they're on the fence, and I think that this stretch of games coming up, I think the next six, the two against Philly and the four against Boston, are going to determine what they do. If I'm a betting man, which I'm not, I would say that they're going to both try to buy, but buy smart. And by that, I mean, I think they're going to try to find guys with club control that they can keep past this year. Maybe they try to get rid of, say, a Justin Wilson, who has some money left on the table, to open up a little more flexibility to stay under the luxury tax. I don't think they're going to plow over the luxury tax. I really do think that if they do make any buyers type of moves, they're going to keep it within, because I feel like they see the long-term benefit of staying under. But I really don't think they have a set goal in mind. I think Brian Cashman at this point is turning over every rock to see what is available for him to do, whether the Yankees decide to sell, whether they decide to buy, or whether they just decide to do a little bit of both.
So this is Nick Delahanty with Bronx Pinstripes, the Sports Illa Show on ESPN Radio. He's on our Accelerated Sports Complex phone line. Last thing I wanted to ask about was Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball ultimately putting out five questions, whether you love it, like it, don't like it, hate it, or you're neutral on it, as far as some pending hypothetical rule changes. So the runner on second to begin extra innings. What do you think?
I have to be completely honest with you. I absolutely hate it.
Me too.
I think that I worked in independent baseball for a while, and we saw the rule starting to get implemented, and I understood the concept of it at that level because you don't necessarily have a big enough roster to worry about pitching. But if you're going to have that rule, at least give the teams 2 to 3 innings to try to score on their own. I feel like putting it right in the 10th inning is a deficit to the game. It's kind of like you're telling your fans, yeah, we don't really care about the end of this game. We'll just get it over with. And it just seems like they're trying to rush in this pace of play. So for me, I really don't like the rule, and I wish that they would at least move it to the 11th or 12th inning, give the guys a chance to win it on their own in extras before you go to that rule.
Yeah, if you want to tweak it, I agree with that. Move it farther along. No, I disagree. You should not put a runner on second to start any inning in Major League Baseball. No, it fundamentally changes the game. I'm going to correct myself. Position players pitching, I'm neutral on that. Honestly, every once in a while in a blowout, it's kind of fun to see. Anybody disagree with that?
No.
You're good?
No, I like that.
All right, universal designated hitter, both leagues. I think it's about time to move that into the National League. What do you say, Nick?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And what the main thing is, you know, you're trying to get fans into the seats and you're saying that your offense is lacking, and then your National League, you have pitchers hitting. Yeah, you have a guy like Jacob DeGrom that can swing the bat, and we've seen what a guy like Shohei Ohtani can do, but not every pitcher is as capable as those two. So I would vote yes. I think it opens up not only jobs for players, like look at a guy like Nelson Cruz, a guy who's on the trade block. He's limited to American League teams.
Yes.
Imagine his market if the National League had DH. You'd have a bunch of teams in the mix too. So I think it would be beneficial for the National League to have it implemented in the near future.
Current playoff format of 8 teams. What do you think? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you like it? Are you neutral?
I'm neutral to it because my Yankees may need it, but you know, I still think that the expanded playoff is just, I understand they're trying to keep more teams in contention, but I just feel like it takes a little bit of the pressure of the 162. I think it gives teams more leeway throughout the year, and it's really taking away from the meaning of every single game. Like, you could squeeze in with the extra seeds. I kind of dislike it a little bit because of the fact of, you know, I don't like the expansion. I wish that they would kind of come up with a better format, but I understand the purpose, and I know it brings in a lot of revenue, so I'm sure they're loving it.
Last but not least, got about 30 seconds left. As far as the suspended games, obviously we've seen the Yankees have this happen where they ended up cutting the Yankees-Red Sox game short. Do you continue like that, or do you just continue them at a later date? What's your answer or response to that issue?
My thing on that is I would say I would finish the game. I don't like shortened wins. I feel like they're cheap. I know that the teams are probably okay with it because it saves pitching, but I would like to see them find a way to pick up suspended games and try to finish all 9 innings. I do think that when you have a playoff mix and you might get in a little bit of a sticky situation and the team loses a game, that a 3-2 game when it's raining in the 7th inning, you know, that team is going to say, you know, we had a chance to win it. So I would like to see them finish off games.
Appreciate the time. We're going to do it again very soon with Nick Delahanty from Bronx Pinstripes. You're Killing Me Smalls is up next here on ESPN Radio and the Sports Illa Show. Jordan Renan, Jason Fitz, and Michael Lear, as we're going to keep talking to people. We got some guests lined up. It's fire in the second hour, but let's close out the first one next.
The Sportszilla Show.
Oh, yeah?
Bringing the Central New York sports fan together.
You're supposed to wear your mask over your nose?
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
Can everyone hear me okay? Everyone?
listen up.
You're killing me, Smalls.
It's the Sportszilla Show with Rain and Matt on twitch.tv/QSportsTalk and ESPN Radio.
Well, for Pete's sake, here we go again.
So without trying to diss Barstool, I'm not trying to do that. I know some people like it. When you make it on their front page, you know, you've done something that, for example, might be, oh, I don't know, a fight where you end up going through a window twice in a drinking establishment that I may or may not have been in more than a handful of times, times two or something like that in my days. But Mully's has to fix the window. And a couple of guys got in a fight. I'm sure we've all seen that. That has made national news now. I'm not trying to make light of that situation, but it made me think of, you're killing me, Smalls. What makes you roll your eyes? I don't even know if it's in the world of sports, but I'm going to twist it that way. I'm going to assume it was a sports argument. More than likely, it's probably about a girl or just something stupid, because when we imbibe too much, we all do dumb things, all of us. But the fact of the matter is, I wonder what they were fighting about. Was it an argument about, was he a Georgetown fan? Syracuse, Georgetown? Was that it? What were they fighting about? Speculation right now. That's what I want from you guys.
Whether Jim Boeheim should run man-to-man or zone.
Wait, no, Brent Axe wasn't in that fight. No, Brent gets on that once in a while. No, I'm kidding, Brent. He's on vacation.
I mean, I think it was either Yankees-Red Sox, or it was, should they have a runner at second to start extra innings or not?
I think the Padres are the greatest team ever. Waka waka hey.
They're good this year. No, but what, I mean, I
was
think...
Was it a Rain and Rugi kind of argument?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Was it a disagreement on sports? I really want to know that. Like, that's the question I want to know. Because the fact of the matter is, the two guys, I mean, dudes, come on, man. Through a plate glass window. Oh, my Lanta.
Embarrassing.
Cheese and crackers.
Embarrassing. I'll bring it back to sports, though, Rain. So they had a little bit of a UFC bout, right?
Yeah.
On the sidewalk. And, they're probably going to be in trouble with the law.
Yes.
You do that with a pair of skates on frozen water, you sit for 5 minutes and then you're free.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, unless one of them got an instigator.
Well, okay, so then he's got an extra two, but still.
When you're in a drinking establishment, can you cross the line where a 10-minute misconduct is thrown in there and a game misconduct? I think you're both of them. You're out of here, buddy.
Out.
You're out of here.
Yeah, you're getting probably at least an overnight suspension.
You know, the owner,
behind bars.
The owner is probably sitting somewhere in the establishment, like kind of like you were talking about when the umpires throw you out and you're still in the dugout. You haven't even come out of the field to argue yet. He was already like, get him out of here.
Yep.
You're ejected. Please never come back. Are they going to get banned like the fan that threw the ball at Alex Verdugo?
Yeah,
probably.
You're going to ban him from all the drinking establishments in Armory Square? You see those two guys walking, and you're like, yeah, guys, I don't think we want to do this again.
Nope. Board up your windows.
I would rather Syracuse makes national news by winning some football games, for example, or maybe another Sweet 16 Final Four run, something along those lines. There's other things that we could talk about.
TBT.
TBT, Boeheim's elite army, for example, which we'll talk about in a few minutes.
Were they arguing about Space Jam 1 and 2? Which one was better?
That could have been it, too. It seems to be a contentious issue lately. However, it was the number one movie in America. It even beat a Marvel movie out, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yes, Black Widow, right?
Black Widow was good, too.
Huh?
It was good.
Apparently, Space Jam 2 was better.
Interesting.
I think. I haven't seen it. He did. He gave out spoilers yesterday, and then he would not answer the question, which one did you like better? He's like, I'm not saying anything.
Can't answer.
Still won't tell me?
Nope.
Nope. Everybody's got to just watch it with an open mind, right?
That's correct.
Isn't that what you said?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I'm
doubling down.
It's like what Gary Cohen said. You got to try everything once.
You
got to experience it for yourself, I haven't yet.
Won't be the first time we talk to Jordan Renan. ESPN Radio in Central New York is the home of the New York Football Giants. He is ESPN's NFL Nation reporter. He's on our phones next on ESPN Radio.
He's to the 10.
It's the Sportszilla Show on ESPN Radio and twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Here's Rain and Matt.
And, of course, Spencer Davidson in studio with us today. And in hour number two, back on the Accelerate Sports Complex phone line, we welcome in ESPN's New York Giants NFL Nation reporter, the one and only Jordan Renan. It's been long enough. We got to get you back in here, Jordan. Rookies report today. What's the vibe around the team in general, beyond just the excitement that, hey, you know what? Football's back.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's good that we're about this time of the year, right? You know, football's on the horizon. I think with the Giants, you look at it and there's, you look at the roster and you look at the pieces in place and the situation that everybody's in, you say, okay, this team has a chance. Like, this is a better roster than we've seen for the most part the last, you know, 6-7 years, with the exception maybe of a year or two in there. But, you know, they added some pieces this offseason. They spent a bunch of money. They have the quarterback who's set up there saying, okay, you know, should be pretty good this year. This is the year, you know, you got to show your stuff. And he's got those weapons around him. And Saquon's going to be back, whether it's week one or not. I don't think that's the point here when we're talking about big picture, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's optimism for this team. I mean, there is a path to winning 10 games this year. Like, whereas, I don't know, I couldn't say that with confidence or with a straight face even the last couple of years.
Well, I guess my follow-up question is, isn't it really depend on the offensive line? And obviously Daniel Jones has to make leaps and bounds and stop making some of the mistakes. But clearly, and you look at the draft and free agency, but they're going with what they got. They believe in what they did last year as far as fixing this and coaching them up and giving them some time to get better. Andrew Thomas, for example, got better as the year went on. And you're Matt Parrott, and you got Nate Solder, who's back in the mix, and on and on. Hernandez, is this offensive line good enough? What have you heard behind the scenes that we don't know about?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're believers in this group. I mean, they drafted these guys. I think Matt Parrott's going to be pretty good. They want him. You know, they're setting him up, but, hey, win the job. Win that starting right tackle job. They want to see him win that job. They think Andrew Thomas is going to be a good player. They see Nick Gates continuing to get better. Last year was his first year ever playing center.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. And the guard spot, hey, I mean, they know that it's a little bit of a crapshoot there. You know, Shane Lemieux and Will Hernandez will probably get the first crack at it there. And they know, like, hey, this isn't perfect, but they feel like they have enough weapons around them where they can make this offense work, and that they can be, well, I mean, they have to be better than last year. They were terrible last year offensively. They were 31st in the league. Only the Jets saved them from the embarrassment of being the worst offense. I mean, they were second lowest in the league in points per game, and, again, only the Jets saved them from that embarrassment. They were significantly behind everybody else, so. They're set up to be better than they were last year, for sure.
Speaking with Jordan Renan, ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the New York Giants. And Jordan, thank you so much for reminding me about how terrible my New York Jets are. I don't hear that enough, so I appreciate that. That being said, Rain kind of alluded to it.
I mean, last year was a special kind of bad for the Jets. It really was.
Believe me, it was. Yeah, I almost wanted to forget about the sport of football because of it, but I digress. Hopefully things are turning the corner. Anyway, back to the Giants. Rain kind of alluded to it a little bit before. Daniel Jones has to make some leaps and bounds. Do you think he's done enough so far to at least silence some critics that he has potential? What do you think? If not, what do you think he needs to do, and what do you expect from him here in year three?
It's funny. You know, I had a conversation with him, and I asked him, and I said, you know, do you realize that you're sort of like a lightning rod kind of guy? Like, there's just so many opinions about Daniel Jones, and it kind of depends on who you speak to and when, right? Like, after the draft, it was just like, smash Daniel Jones, right? And literally nothing to do with him, more to do with the whole draft process. It was kind of crazy. Then he goes out there, and he has a fairly promising rookie year, right? He does some things where you're like, wow, you know? He had some huge games. He threw 24 touchdown passes in 12 starts.
Yep, that's right.
Starts,
yep.
whatever it was. And so you're like, wow, there's promise there. You know, he could be a pretty good quarterback. Year two, he's going to make that. So if you talk to people then going into last year, like, he's going to make that jump. There were a lot of believers, right? Then he had sort of a down year, but there was a lot of reasons for it also. Granted, he didn't play as well as he wanted, but they lost Saquon Barkley. Sterling Shepard was injured for a bunch. They didn't have, like, who did he have around him? There wasn't the opportunity there. Then again, he didn't play, you know, his best football. So now it's sort of like the pendulum has swung back. Like, I think more often than not you hear, oh, he's no good. He stinks. He's a bust. Especially anyone who's not a Giant fan. I think, you know, he just fumbles everything. So the reality was he actually made some progress in the fumbles and the ball security, which was his biggest problem and remains his top priority now. So I think we should be back to where we were last year, where there's promise with Daniel Jones. Now that he has the weapons, let's see. Let's see him do it. But there's reason for optimism that he can make that jump. I mean, I think he's going to have a pretty good year. I'm on that bandwagon. Like, you tell me. You add Saquon Barkley, because remember, he didn't play last year. So they're adding Saquon Barkley to the offense. They're adding Kenny Galladay to the offense. They're adding Kadarius Toney to the offense. They're adding Kyle Rudolph to the offense. How are you not going to be better?
Yeah.
Like, you, I mean, just by the default, you're significantly better. Who did they lose out of, you know, the skill positions? And when I named those four guys, they lost Wayne Gallman, who they replaced with Devontae Booker.
Depth at tight end, too, Jordan, by the way.
Yeah. They didn't, like, it's not like they lost their tight end and then got Kyle Rudolph. It's not like they got rid of Golden Tate, but he was kind of, you know, wilting at the end anyway of his career. So, and they're adding these other guys. I mean, they're significant additions. So to me, that's enough reason for me to believe this offense should be significantly better. And Daniel Jones should have a pretty good year, more in line with what he did his rookie year, but plus better. I mean, year two under Jason Garrett, I know him and Jason Garrett have a very strong relationship. He likes him a lot. Daniel does, and he thinks he's a very good, smart coach, and we're going to see if that's the case this year in year two in his offense.
Jordan, with tomorrow being the opening day for rookies, what's the first day like for these guys? I'm assuming they already have their playbooks if they're drafted. Like, what's the process like for these guys?
Well, Joe Judge, more than most coaches, is Mr. Conditioning. So a lot of teams these days, they have conditioning tests, and they're not really conditioning tests. They're just like, you know, go run a couple laps. But Joe Judge is big on conditioning, way more than most teams and most coaches. So the Giants are going to have those rookies come in. They better be in shape, and the Giants will find out real quick if they're in shape, because he's going to run them through a pretty rigorous conditioning test. So I think that's step one. You know, all these guys have been here in the spring. They have their playbook, although Kadarius Toney didn't really show up for OTAs, which was one of the stranger unfoldings I've ever seen. I've never really seen that from a rookie, because you want them to, you know, kind of get the stuff out of the way, like learning where the bathroom is, learning where your meeting room is, getting the playbook, how practices are run. I think that's kind of what that time of the year is about for the rookies, and he wasn't there. So for the most part, he showed up to mandatory minicamp, but so most of these guys know the program and what it's going to be like. So, you know, they're just going to go through basically an extension of what they did in the spring in the first couple of days, just to get them ramped up and ready for when they have to start getting in there with the vets and, you know, they start playing football at a different level than most of them have ever played in their life.
So it's Jordan Rendon, ESPN's Giants NFL Nation reporter, with us here on the Sports Illustrated Show on ESPN Radio. They secured Patrick Graham. I mean, there was some whisperings that maybe he would move on to become a head coach. Is the defense going to be as good as last year? Because he really, over the course of the year, coached them up. They're quite good. Obviously, top 10 defense, really, by the end of it. And what they've done this offseason, I mean, they addressed the need for an edge rusher, which was the biggest thing, and go from there. Are they going to be status quo or even better than last year in your mind?
Well, it's tough because, in a way, you look at the talent they had, and they overachieved with that talent last year, right? So they were a top 10 defense. Now, they added to the secondary. The secondary is better. They added pieces on the edge. We don't know if any of them are any good or, you know, as significant players yet. I mean, that's sort of like a cross your fingers, wait and see. So I don't know. It's hard for me to see. Okay, they're already top 10 defense last year, right? Now, they still don't have a dominant edge rusher. They're praying that Leonard Williams will play at the level he played last year, which was the best year of his career. Right, so they need him to repeat the best year of his career and have somebody develop at that edge rusher position. Hopefully, you know, Aziz Ojulari, probably one of the more likely candidates, a second round pick, but they still don't have that dominant edge rusher. So are they capable of being a really good defense? Yeah, I think so. I think, but if they play to their talent this year, it might just be the same result as last year, right? Because they kind of did overachieve last year, in my opinion. So, it's going to be hard to make that jump into a top five elite defense unless they have that dominant edge rusher and somebody develops into that. But that's, I guess, a wait and see. That's a big question with this team, is how good can they be defensively? I think you mentioned it. Patrick Graham did just an incredible job last year, I thought, of coaching it up and getting the most out of every single guy they had on that defensive side of the ball. Now let's see if he can get even more out of some of these younger guys in order to take that defense to the next level. But it's going to be a big task. I think if they have the same success defensively as they did last year, to me, that's still a pretty good season.
Jordan Renan, ESPN NFL Nation reporter from the New York Giants. Jordan, you mentioned that they could get 10 wins this year. We're going to put you on the spot here to close things out. What is your prediction for their final record this year? What are you feeling that at the end of the year, after 17 games, this team is going to look like?
I think they're going to be a little better than average team. So 9-8 is my number. Remember, we are at a 17-game season. I know 9-8 sounds ridiculous. 10-7 sounds ridiculous. You know, we're so used to it's 10-6, right? You know, yep. 9-7. No. So I got 9-8, which is still a pretty good season. I mean, we'll see what that equates to in the division, which is still – there's no powerhouse in the Giants division. They have that going for them, right? There's no Chiefs in the division where, you know, if the Giants go 9-8, they're going to finish 5 games out of first place or whatever, right? I don't see that happening. So a slightly above average team, but that's a big jump for this team. They haven't – when's the last time they had a winning record?
Yeah,
2016?
No. Don't remind me.
2016? Once since 2011, and that was the 26. So in the last decade, they've had one team with a winning record. So the fact that I'm sitting here predicting to you that they're going 9-8, that's a significant thing for this organization right now.
Jordan, let's catch up again in a couple weeks. We really appreciate you taking some time for us today, okay? Thanks, man. It's been too long, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Sounds good. Have a good one. Have a good rest of the summer, and we'll kick it into high gear soon enough.
You got it. Jordan Renan, ESPN Nation's NFL reporter for the New York Giants here on ESPN Radio. ESPN Radio. It's the Sportszilla Show. We're back, hopefully, with Jason Fitz. We'll dial him up and see what happens.
It's the Sportszilla Show with Rain and Matt on ESPN Radio and twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. Listen to this. Mic check. Okay? Good. Here's your sports sound check.
Seems about every 6 weeks we get a no answer from Jason Fitz. That's all right, man. We love talking to him. We'll hook it back up again next Tuesday. So in the meantime, we're going to substitute. And if he calls it at any point in time, which has happened before, we'll pick him up in the middle of it and we'll ask him a few questions that we had intended. But we'll go sound check instead because I've got some audio that I wanted to share with you. You know, I went on a rant and I think I blew a gasket and definitely had that vein on the side of my. See, I got to turn for the Twitch camera. It's over here. Glue guy.
Yes.
Vouch for me.
Yes.
Sometimes when I get a little bit heated, Spencer Davidson is with us as well. It just pops out of my head. Got a little animated about Aaron Rodgers because I'm just done with the drama, the melodrama, the soap opera. Is it? And I think they're both wrong. This has gone on way too long. He clearly, and Greeny said it earlier, does not want to be there. Is it about the money? Well, they've offered him an extension, the ability to play there 5 more years, the ability to dictate how he ends his career. I mean, he gives up $37 million this year if he does not play. Do they just trade him and get it over with? I know they're scared of the dead cap space and all of that. Glue guy.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the Adam Schefter story because he could have been the highest paid player in the NFL and he chose not to. So as Adam Schefter said, it's not about the money.
Yeah, we had that tweet. Do anybody have the tweet in front of them? I know it's floating around here somewhere. Read that Adam Schefter tweet for me, Spencer.
This offseason, the Packers offered Aaron Rodgers a 2-year contract extension that would have tied him to Green Bay for 5 more seasons and made him the highest paid QB and player in football. Rodgers declined the offer. Proof, it's not about the money.
It was not about the money. It wasn't...
It's just
not what it was.
No.
He doesn't want to be there.
Or did he want even more money?
No. How much is enough? No. He's already a multimillionaire, tens and tens of millions.
He wants to own the team.
He's loaded. Hey, that's not the way it works in Green Bay. The fans own the team. He just wants out of there.
Yeah.
I think at this point, he just wants out of there. How do you even agree? Well, you know, he didn't really. I mean, there was issues before last year, and then he wins the MVP, and we know they had a nice deep run in the playoffs. I just think it's time. You've got to figure this out.
Yeah, glue guy, he doesn't need any more money. He's got that Jeopardy money now. But, you know, there's no salvaging the situation. You know, once you make this airing of the grievances public.
And it's personal.
It's personal, and it's just, there's no resolving it. If he is on that Packers team come week one, if he's taking the field with the Packers, I mean, there is going to be such a shadow cast over this season. Every single play, every single down, every single game. You can't patch this up. You know Rodgers doesn't want to be there. It's time to move on, because this is going to be such a distraction for the organization. It's not going to be good for anybody.
Well, let me give you Greeny's words that I had alluded to just a couple of minutes ago, because this is Sound Check on ESPN Radio and the Sportzilla Show.
Aaron Rodgers has made it clear he is in a place in his life where he wants control of the situation. And so in that moment, what he decided somewhere deep in the recesses of his mind, the beautiful mystery, was he was going to look, when he got the chance, the people who made that decision square in the eye and say, oh, you think you're now dictating my future? No, no, no. I'm going to dictate my future. What the Packers offered him here, according to Shefty's tweet, in my view, is exactly that. It is all the things I would have perceived Aaron Rodgers to want. You want a mea culpa? What Rodgers is telling you by turning down that extension is that this is not about wanting to control his situation in Green Bay. It is exclusively about wanting out.
Yes, he wants out. You want something more? You want the backup? You want Shefty? Since we brought up both, well, he did and we did. We brought up Shefty's tweet. Here is Shefty's comments on that two-year extension not being about the money.
At some point this offseason, the Green Bay Packers offered Aaron Rodgers a two-year contract extension that would have tied him to Green Bay for five more seasons, made him the highest-paid quarterback and player in all of football. And Rodgers did not take the offer. And there right there is the proof that you need to know that this is not about money. This, over the course of the next week and the discussions that they will have, the two sides, is about figuring out a way that Aaron Rodgers would be willing to show a camp so that he could eventually leave the Green Bay Packers.
So Aaron Rodgers isn't going to be traded because the Packers don't believe in Jordan Love yet. I think that's the biggest impasse going on, because sure, they could eat the dead cap and they could get a lot in return for him. But Jordan Love isn't the guy. They haven't seen enough from him yet to take over.
They've repeatedly at different points had members of that organization say that they are okay with Jordan Love if that's how they have to proceed. So what you're saying is they're lying.
They're saying one thing, but their actions are saying another.
They're talking out there, you know what? Go ahead, Spencer.
No love for Love?
None.
No love.
But is it going to be better with Aaron Rodgers there? Now, look, I know that Love is not going to hold a candle to what Aaron Rodgers can bring, you know, skill-wise, experience-wise on the field. But
that we know of.
Right. But if the situation is so bad that Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to be there, how great is he going to be on the field this year? I mean, it's going to be such a distraction. Is it just time to, eat up a year and then move forward with Love?
I have a weird feeling that with all of that being said and done and all of this crap, because it's just a heaping pile of flaming crap somebody threw at the door of Lambeau Field, he's somehow going to go out and put up MVP numbers again.
Yeah.
Because he just will.
He uses it as motivation.
There's something about him, the chip on his shoulder, his mindset and everything else. He's clearly a bit diva-ish. And just to, stick it to him, he's one way or another, he's going to do that. He's going to show and prove. He's going to appear. He's going to be exactly what he's too good. He's just too good, Spencer. I'm sorry. I just think that's the way this plays out. You want to leave the conversation there, or you got a response?
No, I respect your response. I'm good.
Okay, sound check continues on the Sportzilla Show on ESPN. I'm glad you said that, because I know we've only got a couple minutes left before we get to step aside for a break, and I wanted to bring Shefty back into this, and I wanted to turn the conversation back over to the Giants. And really, one of the biggest issues in helping Daniel Jones succeed, aside from the offensive line, we know he's got weapons now, blah, 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 is the health of Saquon Barkley. He's got time. Here's Shefty.
My understanding is he's coming along well, but again, it's July 20th. It's not September 20th. Mm-hmm. So he's got, 6 weeks or so to still get ready. And they're not going to push this during training camp. And I don't think if and when Saquon Barkley is ready for the Denver Broncos in the regular season opener, that you're going to see 28 carries at that time for Saquon Barkley. I think they're going to ramp him back up. They're going to be very careful with Saquon Barkley, as they should be. And we'll see how that knee responds here this summer. He doesn't know how it's going to respond. So I think there's some natural trepidation on his part.
I think you both want him to fail, want the Giants to fail miserably. I know how you both think.
Unless they're playing the Patriots.
Yes. Yes. I root for anybody to beat the Patriots the same way.
Yes, sir.
I'm a Bills fan a couple of times a year. I absolutely am. They're playing the Patriots. I don't even care if Tom Brady's out of there now.
Yeah, I try to pretend there's no game on at all.
For two reasons. I've always felt that way.
Yeah.
But number two, because it's the glue guy's favorite team, that just makes it even more fun.
Oh, man. Oh, his mic just you got cut the out. Oh,
no, they heard me say more fun for me. That's all I had to say. I was stopping right there.
Yeah.
Let me give you one more piece of audio here in soundcheck before we do take this break. We had talked about unvaccinated players a little bit earlier. Cole Beasley was one of them. Hey, speaking of the Bills, they're trying to get every team to at least 85%. That's the threshold for vaccinated players getting into this season. Shefty told us basically how the NFL is going to deal with that.
Well, I think it'll be similar to last year, and you're hearing about how vaccinated players will not be tested as frequently as the unvaccinated players, who are going to have to go through many of the same measures that they did last year. And so, again, this is still all unfolding now.
Don't think for 2 seconds that somehow isn't going to become an issue this year. For the unvaccinated players, it definitely is. And don't be surprised if it affects football games for your team or a team somewhere in the National Football League.
It absolutely will. But I think, you know, just like with anything, when you have an injury or whatever, you're rehabbing, you come back. I think steps in the right direction. I think this year will be better than last year, and you'll continue to move forward. And this issue will become less and less as you move forward. So I think you're absolutely going to see these issues this year, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as last year.
Definitely not.
And I think because of that, we should, you know, look at it as a positive. Instead of saying, oh, it's still going on, we should look at it as, okay, you know, look, we're getting closer. We're getting closer to normal. We're getting closer to where this isn't going to be an issue. And I think that's kind of my standpoint on this. I do have one quick point about Saquon Barkley for what Schefter said. I think the good thing about Saquon this year, he doesn't have as much pressure on him. You know, as we talked to Jordan about, there's other weapons. So Saquon can kind of come in and gradually, you know, get back into the swing of things. He doesn't have to come in week one and completely shoulder the load, which is good for him.
Yeah, they get a little depth behind him, too, on purpose for that reason. Even his first couple of games back, I don't think he goes full bore.
Right.
Even when he's medically cleared and they say everything is all systems go, that's for sure. As far as the COVID issue, listen, we don't want it to still be part of the narrative. I don't want it to be part of the narrative, but it is still part of the narrative.
Right.
And it's something that you have to keep an eye on. And if you're not realizing that it is still out there at least a little bit, you're in denial, because it's going to matter this year.
Well, look at all the Olympic athletes getting placed on the health and safety protocols constantly. I saw another gymnast last night. We're seeing a lot of NBA players getting hit with that.
Jeremiah Grant, the New York Yankees right now.
Kevin Love.
It's still a thing. This is ESPN Radio. Quick pause. Michael Lear will join us next. He's our official TBT reporter. Yep, Boeheim's Elite Army gets after it on Saturday. Oh, and for the degenerate gamblers, he's got his picks.
The Sportszilla Show. No dropped passes. No fumbles. This is the perfect receiver.
Oh, did you see that hit? Boom!
You're supposed to wear your mask over your nose.
It's the Sportszilla Show with Rain and the Glue Guy, Matt, on ESPN Radio. And twitch.tv/QSportsTalk.
That's right, Matt Page, the Glue Guy. I'm Rain. Spencer Davidson, sports director, WKTV, in studio with us today as we welcome in Comets broadcaster, Syracuse University alum, a guy I call the professor. He calls himself the chef. He's also a degenerate gambler. I mean, he gives us his picks. Oh, and he's our unofficial TBT reporter. Michael Lear is with us now on the Accelerate Sports Complex phone line. So listen, I care about TBT, but I care a lot more when I'm watching Boeheim's Elite Army, who are favored by about 75% of TBT's bracketologists to win it this year, which makes me happy. I'm sure it makes you happy. So based on everything we've seen thus far, what do we need to know prior to Saturday's 11 a.m. game against Forces of Seoul for Boeheim's Army?
I mean, the first thing you need to know is it's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun. And it always is, but it's nice when you know that you're a favorite going in and they have a chance to do some damage. But if you guys have watched the tournament at all this year, the seedings mean nothing. And there's been tons of upsets and tons of teams that almost got upset and barely pulled it out. So I think that's probably, that's the one thing I'm keeping in mind is there's, it's not impossible that this is a really tight game to start off. And it's not impossible that they get upset at some point in this tournament. So you really got to, lock in, I guess. If you're a fan, they need all the support they can get. But the biggest thing is it's just going to be fun to see so many of these guys that we haven't seen in a while. I mean, obviously, a number of them have been on TBT rosters before, but like Tyler Lydon. Who's seen Tyler Lydon play in a while? Nobody, really. So it's going to be fun to see him and Chris McCullough, who had a very, very short Syracuse career, only 16 games. Like, let him get some Syracuse moments in there. So I think that's the most important thing is just know that it's going to be fun. The tournament's going to be fun. Our broadcast, we're going to make it as fun as possible and keep it light and enjoyable for everybody.
And, of course, Tyrese Rice, Kiefer Sykes, DJ Kennedy, DeAndre Kane added some those that are not necessarily known for wearing orange, but we'll take them for this year's tournament for sure. Oh, and the Elam ending is awesome. Mm-hmm. Period.
So great. I love it.
Period. Full stop. Right. Andrew White's the designated shooter, though. He's... Every team, all 64, get one shooter, and they try to win $33,000. What are his chances?
I mean, I think he's got a great shot. He broke Jerry McNamara's record of 112 threes in a season in his 1 year that he played in Orange. And I think it's going to be fun to see what he's like now. I mean, I loved watching him. He was actually there when I was in school and transferred out of Nebraska to Syracuse. So I think he's got a shot. Why not? At that point, how fast can you do it? Can you be hot for a minute? And then if you're hot for a minute, you win $30,000. Like that's a pretty fun competition.
Not only are we going to talk about TBT, we'll have Michael Lear on over the remainder of the tournament to talk about TBT. If they beat Forces of Seoul on Saturday, they move on. And on Monday at 6 o'clock, they'll play the winner of the Overlooked and Team Heartfire. Yeah. Michael Lear is on with us on the Sports Illa Show on ESPN Radio.
Michael, TBT technically started last week. By the time Syracuse plays, it'll be, 8 days since the tournament started that they finally play? Boeheim's Army, I should say, not Syracuse. But do you think this late start for Boeheim? I mean, first of all, I think it's so strange that they staggered this start. Do you think a later start for Boeheim's Army could help? Do you think it hurts them seeing other teams play, them having to wait, maybe think about it a little more? Or does it not really matter when they start?
First on the staggered start, I'm going to talk to some people who – like to some of the people that run the tournament and find out why. But I think my guess is it's just availability of buildings and like picking a region and trying to figure out what's going to work. Cause obviously ideally they'd rather have it this way, but I think the advantage is you don't have a week break where like these guys who are playing in Wichita, they're going to win their region and then not be able to go really play for a pretty long time where, you know, if it's every other day, like it's obviously tiring and you might want an extra day off here or there. But I think what's going to benefit them is being able to just roll right through. If you win, you rest and practice a little the next day and you win again, and then you repeat and repeat all the way through August 3rd. So I think that'll be an advantage. As far as preparation, I mean, I just think they probably would have got the same schedule either way. Like if they started this week, they would have been in Syracuse getting ready a week before. But I think that the biggest advantage there is not having the long break in the middle.
Michael Lear is on the phone with us on ESPN Radio and the Sports Illa Show. Before we get to your picks for the degenerate gamblers, did you have money on Colin Morikawa to win the British Open the first time he ever played it? It's his second major that he won the first time he ever played it, 24 years old. I mean, that was your first choice, right?
Absolutely, of course. How else would I have bet it? No, I was on Orange Nation yesterday, and I told them I actually didn't bet any golf this weekend. I was supposed to be in a pool. I forgot, and then like sometimes I'll get my last minute stuff in Thursday, and I didn't. So I didn't bet golf this weekend. I just enjoyed the tournament and was hoping for Spieth to make a push towards the end, just because I'm always rooting for the guys. If I don't have money involved, I'm always rooting for the guys who are second, third, fourth, or 2 strokes back to 4 strokes back to do something crazy and put a couple birdies together down the stretch. But it was fun to watch. I mean, good for him. Did you guys see him in the airport? He was what airport was he in where he was just traditional old, like carrying around the trophy and not really treating himself like a 2-time major champ?
No big deal. Just the claret jug. That's all I got here. Just happened to win the British Open. Nothing to see.
Michael, we want to talk a little bit of hockey with you. Obviously, the Seattle Kraken expansion draft is tomorrow. And right now, in a lot of mock drafts, you see a lot of familiar names to Central New York hockey. You know, a lot of in the mock draft right now, they have Cole Lind from Vancouver being selected, Yanni Gord from Tampa Bay, formerly of the Syracuse Crunch, Adam Gaudette from Chicago. He used to be with the Canucks organization in the Comets. Troy Stetcher, same deal. What do you think that says about the type of development that organizations like the Syracuse Crunch and Utica Comets provide, that, you know, other teams that are first starting out would potentially want to look at these guys and pick these guys for their NHL roster?
Yeah, I think for Tampa Bay specifically, I mean, there's no secret that they've developed one of the best prospect pools and clearly developed a back-to-back cup champion team. They've done fantastic. And I think for Vancouver, it shows, and what the Comets provided was, it kind of shows that Vancouver fans, albeit they don't love to be patient, and I understand that for sure, but the patience is starting to add up a little bit, where maybe one of their top prospects is the guy that goes to Seattle and not somebody who's currently on the team. That'll be interesting. I don't know if Colvin's going to go to Seattle. I would imagine they'd take somebody with a little more NHL experience, but that'd be really interesting to see him go and see a guy that was just here get picked up in the biggest story of the summer. And I love the expansion draft. I think it's so cool. Like, I think one team should just scrap it every year and do an expansion draft every year.
So we always ask you for your picks there, Michael. I'm assuming you have an NBA Finals one tonight, right?
Yeah, I got two NBA Finals and a baseball pick. For the Finals, I like the over tonight, 221.5. And I think that early in my gambling life and a lot of people in general, there's this conception that an elimination game is going to be tighter defense and it's going to be a lot more intense and low scoring. But when you look at the data, elimination games, when the total of the elimination game is greater than the previous game, has hit the under 22 out of 31 times since 2015, 2016. So I'm actually going to be on the over tonight. I think it'd be fun. It's going to be an awesome game. And I'm not going to pick the Suns to win, but I do think they're going to. I'm going to take Jay Crowder over 1.5 assists. With Dario getting injured and him getting more minutes, he's going to get a ton of more opportunity to get rid of the ball. And so I'm going to take Jay Crowder's over 1.5 assists, because 2 assists isn't that many anyway.
And you got 2 more picks for us after that, right?
Just a baseball pick. Twins plus 130 over the White Sox. I think that game should be a coin flip. I don't think it should be really as heavily favored as it was. Last night it was plus 150 for the Twins. Dallas Keuchel's in the midst of probably the worst year of his career, like besides his rookie year. The Twins excel against left-handed pitching. I think they'll be pretty good tonight, and I actually think they have the advantage in starting pitching, so I'm taking just the Twins to win the game straight up.
All right, Michael, you've got to report in on your record at the end of the week. We'll look forward to Friday-ish getting you back on here, if that's good with you. We'll work around the time.
Yeah, Tommy Hogan, brother, and I will be in the car.
Oh, okay, perfect. Oh, then he's going to be chirping. What's the new chirping term you told us about in hockey earlier?
Bender?
Yeah. What?
Bender, yeah.
He's going to be a bender.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, you can't, when you stand up on skates, if you don't know how to skate, your ankles kind of bend in, so you're called a bender.
He's just going to be...
Yeah, you got to tape your ankles up.
That's right.
That was an excellent use of my nickname, by the way, for Tommy Hogan, Michael. I appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you at the end of the week when you're in the car, okay?
All right, sounds good, guys.
Yeah, that's the one and only Michael Lear. I love rapping with that guy. He's a lot of fun. Degenerate gamblers love him, too. I wonder how many people have won and or lost money based on his picks. Somebody has somewhere.
He's either making a lot of friends or a lot of enemies.
Yeah, that's what's up. Last thing we'll say today is next on ESPN Radio.
The Sportszilla Show with Rain and Matt.
Can everyone hear me okay?
Hello? I can hear you.
Okay, well, so we've made some amazing adjustments, and okay.
Here's the last thing we'll say today on ESPN Radio,
ESPN,
and twitch.tv/QSportsTalk.
So Tom Brady went to the Orange House today. Cole Beasley's wife got offered stock in Pfizer by Mark Cuban. Bezos gave up Amazon and today went to space, right?
He did.
So you have that. I think the Suns are going to win somehow tonight, and we're going to get a game seven.
I agree, actually.
I hope so, because I think that just makes it more fun. And then it's Thursday, right?
It is.
Yes.
And then it's Thursday, game seven. Fingers crossed for that. Matt and I are back for Yankees on Deck at 6 o'clock right here on ESPN Radio from Frohn & Son Funeral Home, Pathfinder Bank, and the Killebrew Saloon. But before we bounce, Matt, the Orioles and the Rays play a baseball game tonight, and it's of historical significance simply because it is, six, eight women, all-female team. This is great.
Yeah, there's a five in the graphic, so there might even be more women.
Behind the scenes.
Yes, doing an all-women's MLB broadcast. You can watch that 7 p.m. YouTube.
Oh, man, I think it's just so nice to see. In the NBA, seven of the eight head coach hirings were African-American. It's just equality. Everybody is the same. We're all human one way or another. That's what America's all about, right? And even in the world of sports. Stick to sports is not a thing. Just stop with that nonsense. Good for these ladies.
So it'll be the Orioles and the Rays tonight.
Yep, good for these coaches. It's just a great thing. Last words from you, Spencer Davidson. When are you coming back in? Are you coming back in tomorrow, Thursday? We'd love to have you whenever.
Yeah, I could do tomorrow. Let's do it. Let's do 3 days in a row, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right?
I think that gives us a good flow.
Let's do it.
Absolutely. So you're with me, though? Suns win tonight? We get a game seven?
I think so. And the more I think about it, I think so.
Okay. What'd you think of Michael Lear's picks? He's got a pretty good record. He's above 500 on the year, right?
Yes.
I know that. We'll get an update from him at the end of the week. All right. We're going to have some fun at Sportscaster Wednesday tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
I just combined Mario and Nico's names.
That's amazing.
Inadvertently. And I could never do that again if I tried. That was not intentional. At all. Everybody, have a great rest of your night. It's ESPN Radio. Yankees on Deck at 6. Don't forget.